This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
I said we had a guest today, and our guest is Frank Dees. Frank is one of six Dees boys, grew up in Litchfield, and Frank has an interesting story to tell because of a tragedy that occurred back in 1964. Frank, I'm just going to tell you to go ahead and start telling the story.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
It's always a pleasure to come back to Litchfield and run into a lot of friends because they all remember, if they're any of the Dees boys' age, they remember the tragedy that occurred. I want to start off by saying I love all sports. Sports are the most valuable thing that I think I grew up with that. With my family, we love to compete. We still love to compete, and we're still competitive as brothers. I'll start off with what give you a little background here. In 1964, we had two games in September against opponents. The first games were it was called a jamboree. And it was the first time that they were trying it over in Staunton, Illinois. And there were four teams that were each competing. Litchfield was one, Staunton was another, there were two others, I think Gillespie and Hillsborough, but I'm not really sure on that. And after that particular game, on a Wednesday, Rick came up to me and by his locker. And we're getting ready to go into English class. And he said, "Don't tell Mom and Dad, but I hurt my head in last night's game." And he pointed to his forehead. And it kind of stunned me. And I remembered that. And as a younger brother, I was 15, and he was just turned 17. We were 19 months apart. And Saturday's game came up, and in Saturday's game, I got grounded for some reason. There were many reasons why I probably should have been grounded, but the phone rang during Saturday's game, and I answered it, and it was a hospital in Staunton, Illinois. And Rick had gone down on the sidelines. And in the last 50 years, I pick up pieces and pieces. And I just recently, when I was back in Litchfield this last year, one of my buddies came up to me. It was Tim Nobby. He said, "You know, I went in for Rick when he went down." And those are the pieces that families put together. And that's what I've been putting together for the last 50 years, I guess, 50 plus years. But in that game, Rick went down. He went from the Staunton Hospital to St. John Mercy Hospital, where he died. Mom and Dad went there that evening after the phone call, and Mom was very religious, if you know. Mama Dees, she was a very strong Catholic and loved her Catholic faith, and was in the chapel all night praying for Rick. Unfortunately, it was the second impact that caused his death, as later the autopsy had showed. I kept that secret till 2012, and friends of mine who I shared the story with always come up to me and they said, "Why wouldn't Rick, why would he tell you and not tell your mom and dad?" And I said, "Well, it's quite simple. Mom and Dad probably would not have let him play." And so what I've been doing since I actually kept that secret in 2012. Mom passed away in May of 2012, and in August of 2012, I went to an editorial staff out in New York, where I live, right outside of Albany, and they did a full-page editorial, and that became my mission. And my mission is sometimes we have to protect athletes from themselves, and it's just a game. So let me say this again, that sports are very, very, very important, but they're not worth somebody's life. And kids or adults or parents always check, make sure, and they're the five R's I talk about. The five R's are, remember Rick's D story. There's reporting, and there the CDC has 10 reasons why, 10 top reasons why kids don't report. Rest, rehab, and return to play. And if I can just turn to John just for a second and ask him to read these 10.
Reasons why kids do not report. They didn't think they suffered a concussion. They didn't think it was serious enough to report. They weren't aware of the potential negative health consequences. They believed that they could safely delay disclosure until their removal was less likely to affect the game or practice play, or until the symptoms got so bad they could no longer be ignored. They didn't want to be removed from the game. They didn't want to disappoint coaches, teammates, parents, or fans coming out to the game. They felt pressure from coaches, teammates, parents, and fans to play injured. They believed that coaches, teammates, parents, and fans expected them to play injured. They feared suffering negative consequences if they reported concussion symptoms, such as loss of playing time or position as a starter position. They didn't think their own positive attitude toward concussion symptom reporting was shared by the coach or the medical staff. You know, these 10 things, these are all exactly what the NFL fought for years to get done, and they finally did. Now you see the guys go in the concussion protocol tent 8 times a game, you know. Right. So this list, every single one of them are bad reasons to not report. So you talk about the five R's. You talk about telling your brother's story and this reporting. One of the other things that I thought was worth pointing out is how you have done, well, have taken so much time, and this has become such a mission for you.
Well, during my golden years, that's what they call these, I tell all my friends, we should have retired on the front end rather than the back end, but all of us would be dead. After keeping the secret, and I tried to on several occasions tell my brothers, but it really, really wouldn't come out. There were many nights, well, imagine over 40 years, you replaying a clip in your head where your brother told you, don't tell mom and dad, I hurt my head, and then he dies after that. Most recently, I spent a lot of time over in Jerseyville with a Nancy is her name, who I met 1974, Nancy Moulton, and I found out that Phil Mann lived down the street. Now, Phil was the coach of Litchfield Purple Panthers at that particular time, so I went knocking on Phil's door and explained to him what happened, and he looked at me and he said, you know, I knew there was more to it, and we looked at all the clips and so forth. And since that time, I've gone and sought out all my past coaches, Coach Roper here in town, John Dunkirk here in town, Riley Wallace, who I haven't ever got through to. Riley was a great coach. He went from here to Centenary, and from Centenary was the Rainbows at University of Hawaii coach for 40-something years. He actually was in Jerseyville, too. So I'm backtracking and letting everybody know that kids will hide. And the number reason, one reason, not even mentioned right on that list, is kids just want to play. After COVID right now, they really want to play.
Yeah, that's true. Our guest is Frank Dees. We're talking about his older brother, Rick, who passed away after a football injury. Definitely I believe you said it was a brain aneurysm, exactly what it was. But because of a couple of hits during a game back in 1974. One game and then another one just a few days later. We're going to visit with him a little bit more here coming up. Right now, we'll take a break. It's 20 minutes after 2 o'clock at WSMI. 106.1, we're visiting with Frank Dees. Frank, one of six brothers here in Litchfield. Your family, been here for a long time. Your dad, World War II, sent back letter after letter after
270.
Letter. 270 letters to his wife, Betty. Those letters wound up someplace special, huh?
Yeah, brother Bill Dees, who's over in Hannibal now, who was a councilman here in town for some time, scanned every one of those letters after Mom had passed. And I think Bill would be great for you to interview sometime about how he scanned all those and then gave all of us a Christmas gift of four volumes of Mom's letters from Dad. It reads like a screenplay. And so Tim and Dennis and myself and Bill all flew down to New Orleans, and we went to the World War II National Museum, which is right off Bourbon Street. If you ever get down to New Orleans, do not miss the National World War II Museum. And we donated those original letters because they would have been destroyed or deteriorated, and they have a way of keeping those. So I think Brother Bill worked very hard on putting all that stuff together, and he's our genealogist expert in the family. Brother Tim, I want to talk about Brother Tim, was a most valuable player his senior year at Litchfield High School, and his trophy's still there in the trophy case. And he went on to SIU Carbondale and was the first of four Deeses that went down there. Brother Rick, before he passed, was going to go to Carbondale, and I want to put in a little plug for SIU Carbondale because they've gone from a enrollment of 24,000 down to 8,000.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I know. They had two brand new high rises, so if you're a Carbondale person, you know Neely Hall and Schneider Hall. They just destroyed those. They just tore those 16-floor student housing down. But Carbondale's a beautiful campus. It got hurt with a lot of the local junior colleges, and a lot of the Chicago kids quit coming down and going closer. And the branch, as I call it, no offense to those people like Robbie Robinson who went to Edwardsville. But it was just a branch, and they opened up SIU Edwardsville for St. Louis, Missouri folks can come over and have free tuition. So that hurt a whole lot of. And so Carbondale is kind of like trying to get its footing again, and so I'm putting in a little plug for them. But
well, I remember when I was in Carbondale, of course, all of my friends from Chicago would tell me the only reason they came to SIU Carbondale was that was as far away as they could get from home and still pay in-state tuition.
Ah, that's a good point, excellent point, because they'd jump on Amtrak and go all the way down to SIU or take what was 51 all the way back and forth. But, yeah, most of my... I still have a lot of Saluki friends that came out. I had in 2018, before COVID hit, had 12 of my college roommates and friends that I knew from the 60s and early 70s that came out to stay at my place, and we had a fabulous time. So Rick would have gone to SIU. I did go to SIU from 67 to 71 and then immediately got drafted because that was the name of the game.
It was then.
My brother Tim, going back to Tim, people come up to me and say, thanks for your service, and I say, don't thank me. Thank my brother Tim. Tim Dees was a officer during the Vietnam, drafted, Silver Star, two Bronze Stars, two Purple Hearts, a Green Beret, jumped into Cambodia when Nixon said we weren't there, and I was down in Carbondale where they were rioting in the streets about ending of the war.
Oh, yeah. How's Tim doing these days?
He's great. I asked him to come over here. He didn't have to say anything. He's just that. But knowing Tim, he said, "Oh, no, I'm fine." He's pretty laid back.
Hi,
brother Archie Dees.
I used to see him walking a lot. When he lived on Franklin.
Yeah, he ended up then getting out of the service, coming here to Litchfield, and taught over 35 years senior math, and I still am with him all the time, and these old folks coming up to me, hey, Mr. Dees, Mr. Dees. So.
Yes.
And
you
then
bet.
Then I mentioned Brother Bill. He went down to SIU, and you know Bill and Meg from having lived here almost entire career in life until they had grandchildren down the road and get closer to those grandchildren. And then Brother Chuck just recently passed away, and it was another dagger in the heart because Chuck was a wonderful photographer and took beautiful pictures. He worked for the Illinois State Police Crime Division and didn't particularly care for that, and went to Natural Resources and did some fabulous pictures, of which we're still finding storage places. And Chuck actually, I think part of his untold story was on the day Rick died in September 28th, 1964, people started coming over to the house. And I'm not talking about a few people. I'm talking about hundreds of people coming by the old Dees place on Harrison Street, which has been remodeled. And it just so happened to be that same day that Rick died, Chuck's 11th birthday. And a few years back, he told me, point blank, he said, Frank, you know, I've never had a happy birthday. So I think if there was such a thing as PTSD for an 11-year-old, he had it. And for the last 10 years of his life, he never married. That's what he needed, is a good woman. And he never married and ended up traveling. And if you see the movie No Man's Land, it's very similar to that. He lived in his van and traveled and was a missionary. And that was his life. And that's, unfortunately, in February, Tim got a call, had two state troopers come to the home. And Bill and I went down to Florida. And Chuck was driving and went off the road and hit a palm tree and was pronounced dead. And we think it was a massive heart attack. So, and then Brother Dennis, for all those Denny Dees fans, which he's got a bunch. He's at University of Vermont, UVM Medical Hospital, where he's the intake specialist dealing with the horrible, horrible epidemic we have in this country with drugs and meth and fentanyl and all those issues. And Dennis, out of the six boys, he's probably the best athlete, God-given, plus he had five good teachers.
five good teachers. Of course he did. To wrap this up, two things. I wanted to, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you to talk about this problem, to talk about how to maybe make more schools aware, to help get protocols in place, what do they need to do? How do they get a hold of you?
You can write me, and I believe it or not, I still use cursive, and I write handwritten letters. I also use the computer, but you can get a hold of me by writing It's Just a Game, Inc. Frank Dees, Post Office Box 3, Altamont, New York. And for all those people that like to do email, you can find me on Facebook also under Frank Dees, It's Just a Game. Or you can just Google Who's Frank Dees, and you'll see a podcast I did some time ago, 2 years ago. My email is, Mama Dees gave me this when I was asking my mom, what's a good email address? She said, well, I tell everybody ABCDs, so why don't you try ABCDs? So my email is ABCDs, D-E-E-S, 11@yahoo.com.
There you go. That's how you get a hold of Frank Dees. Frank, one of the things I wanted to close this out with, you had mentioned the poem that was written by one of his friends and how the last stanza was put on his gravestone. And it's obvious that he must have touched an awful lot of people, because
He had a lot of girlfriends.
Well, evidently some male friends, too.
Yes.
But the last stanza of this poem, written by Jane Elledge, was engraved on his headstone. And she says, "Now we are better for having known him, for he taught us to live each of life's little parts. And even now he is not really gone, for Rick lives on within our hearts." That's certainly the case with you, and no doubt with many others. I sure thank you for coming today and telling this story. It was a fascinating story, and I'm sorry it didn't have a happy ending, but it was a story that needed to be told.
Yes. And about the picture, you want to mention something?
Yes. There is a picture and a jersey that was in the trophy case at Litchfield High School for many years.
40 years.
40 years. And your father got it and took it.
And hung it in the home the last couple of years of his life.
I see. So now, I guess I'll talk to Dr. Firsta now.
That would be good.
And see if there's room in a trophy case maybe to bring it back. You say his number is retired. They've never done it again.
Number 54 has never been worn. People probably, younger age, probably don't even know that. But that's, it was permanently retired, and the jersey's here. I truly appreciate John Marty. John Michael Marty, the man with three first names.
That's the one.
to invite me, and I look forward. Let me put in a plug for Robbie's coming event still in November. It's still on a go. And if you get a chance, look at YouTube and see Robbie's reach out and with Stephen Ray, and also see Robbie's gig and Robbie Robinson with Frankie Valli. Jam and Java. He does it every week. And Robbie's just a freewheeling, good Christian, hardworking musician that quit football his sophomore year after my brother was killed to get into music. He made a good choice.
Yeah, he did. I will say this. There is nobody whose fingers fly across the keyboard any faster on that Hammond organ than Robbie. It's no wonder he's a Hammond ambassador.
He's a ham, all right.
That's it. Frank, thank you very much for being here.
You
bet.